Welcome to the Procurement Show.
Hello and welcome to the Procurement Show, the show that tackles the topics we all need to think about and sets out to explore the more interesting bits of procurement. I'm Jonathan O'Brien.
And my name's Paul Philpott, and I'm here to keep asking the question as to why am I here?
I ask that question every week too.
Thank you.
This week we're talking about the growing threat of cybersecurity in our supply chains, a key area of risk for any business, or where our customers' data is shared with our suppliers, or where parts of the supply chain are critical.
The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, enabling the future of procurement in organisations around the globe.
And to help us, our guest this week has 25 years' experience bringing innovative technologies to market. He has held leadership roles in product management and engineering at a number of successful startups, as well as Fortune 500 companies such as Brocade and Cisco. He is the Chief Product Officer at Resilinc and is responsible for product and technology vision, direction, and delivery. Resilinc offer a range of supply chain resilient solutions powered by the latest technology. Please welcome to the Procurement Show, Sumit Vakal. Sumit, it's a pleasure to have you join us today. Thank you so much for agreeing to come and be on the
Hello.
Procurement Show today. We're really interested in this topic of cybersecurity, and particularly in the supply chain, because it feels like this is a whole area that nobody's really paying attention to. But what do you think? Are organizations paying enough attention to cybersecurity in the supply chain?
Thank you very much for having me on your show today. I really appreciate this opportunity to speak about this really important topic, like you said, which isn't getting the attention it deserves. Let me start right there, right? Unfortunately, no, cybersecurity in supply chain does not get the attention it needs. One of the main reasons we see this happen at Resilinc with our clients is the following. When you think about cybersecurity, traditionally you're thinking internal, you know, your company's operations, your company's businesses, and you're thinking IT. Email servers and file servers and so on. When you're thinking suppliers, you're thinking supply chain. But who's thinking of suppliers as cybersecurity? That kind of falls through the cracks. IT doesn't have the relations with supply chain and suppliers, and a supply chain typically does not have expertise in InfoSec. So unfortunately, what we see is this is an area which kind of nobody pays attention to.
And do we know how bad this situation is? I mean, can you give us some examples of, I want to use the term events, or do you call them cybersecurity incidents or oops up moments that have happened in supply chains?
Certainly. Research at Resilinc shows us some really interesting statistics here. In 2023 alone, we recorded over 700 cybersecurity incidents. That was up 36% compared to 2022. Just in the first quarter of 2024, that cybersecurity incidents have been up 12% compared to the same time frame last year. Now, those are interesting numbers, but what I really want to emphasize is that cybersecurity incidents are not restricted or limited to any particular industry. We see them across the board. You think of an industry, you will see a cybersecurity incident there, whether it's healthcare or general manufacturing or anything in between. Let me provide an example that really brings home the severity of the problem this can cause. Back in February of 2022, one of Toyota's suppliers in Japan, Kojima Industries, was hit by a ransomware attack. Now, what happened then is this supplier was unable to provide materials, components to Toyota, right? For several days, all of Toyota's plants in Japan shut down. Ultimately, that ended up impacting 5% of Toyota's output for the month. Now, we're not talking about a few hundred or a few thousand dollars here, right? This is Toyota. So we're talking about tens of millions of dollars of impact here. The key learning here is the following, right? When disruptions happen in the supply chain, including cybersecurity related disruptions, the impact to business is massive. And academic research over the years has shown that when a supply chain disruption happens, the impact of it actually persists well beyond the disruption itself clearing up. So the impact to revenue, to brand, to stock price, that actually persists over multiple years. So yeah, this is a pretty severe issue that supply chain faces. But again, as I was saying earlier, it is not something that gets too much attention, unfortunately.
This is a really good point, because when we talk about incidents and examples, you know, we've heard about things, read about things, we kind of stop at the point at which the attack happened and we forget about the, the cascade of events that is caused from that.
And I'm interested in just understanding those consequences a little bit more. And you sort of talked about brand in there. You talked about reputation. You talked about operations. You know, how bad could this get in terms of the consequences for an organization of a supply chain disruption caused by a cyber attack?
Let's look at it this way, right? As we know, in enterprise, contracts tend to be multi-year. You pick a vendor, you stick with them for multiple years. You have long-term contracts for price benefits, for continuity, and so on. So if you're a vendor, you have a supply chain disruption because of a cybersecurity incident, you're not able to provide material to your customer, they are going to go sign with another vendor, and all of a sudden, for 2, 3, 4 years, you're out of the game. This is one of the big reasons why that impact persists over multiple years.
The data example that you gave, I'm just actually trying to think about this. The data example that you gave a few moments ago kind of indicates that this situation is on the increase. Hmm. But I'm trying to rationalize it in my head that eventually, are we going to come to a situation where it will just go away? Because we're improving how we roll out security efforts within, we're rolling out a better knowledge base. So surely over time, companies will prevent more stuff going wrong and these things happening, so it should fade away and become an old issue. Or am I just being a bit optimistic?
So here's the thing, right? As with everything in life, the bad guys are always a step ahead. That's the unfortunate reality, right? In cybersecurity, we have an additional set of challenges. One is that the criminals are just getting smarter as computation gets cheaper. For instance, we're already starting to hear about AI-generated cybersecurity attacks. Here's another one. State-sponsored bad actors, right? So there are certain nations who actively sponsor pseudo-criminal organizations, organizations within their own government, actively trying to exploit cybersecurity, you know, holes and vulnerabilities to their benefit. Benefit could be economic in some cases with intellectual property. Benefits could be just, you know, getting that geopolitical advantage, right? And if you think about the budgets that these governments and these nation state actors dedicate to cybersecurity and to hacking, you will see that, you know, the pace of the incidents, the sophistication of the incidents will just keep growing. Ultimately, the way we look at it at Resilinc is that hope is not a strategy. Companies have to get proactive in putting down supply chain risk management practices. Companies have to proactively invest in people, processes, and technology to build a robust supply chain. And this is an ongoing investment that they have to make.
Jonathan, I was wondering how long it would take before those two letters came into
the AI.
It wasn't quite a record, but I tell you what, the context was very scary.
This whole
thought of actually AI being used in order to drive cyber attacks, that frightens me good and proper.
I think we ain't seen nothing yet in terms of how AI will drive criminal behavior. But you said a phrase in there that hope is not a strategy. So many companies, perhaps not deliberately, but their entire risk management strategy is based upon hope. Others, and perhaps in the US, most of Europe and the UK, you know, we're used to fairly sophisticated levels of IT cyber protection arrangements. But if we sort of think about remote suppliers, if we've got a supply chain into a remote part of the world where maybe IT sophistication levels of protection may be somewhat basic, is there like a natural vulnerability just because in a developing nation that the IT just isn't up to it yet to have the protection in place?
That is absolutely one a critical attack vector that you have to worry about when it comes to supply chain cybersecurity. If you look at a typical supply chain, and this is what Resilinc sees across its customer base, it's a very standard curve, right? You have a small number of large suppliers, you have more medium-sized suppliers, and then you have this long tail of smaller suppliers. Now, if you think about supply chain disruptions, it is not your traditional supply chain problem where you're controlling for cost. In your traditional supply chain model, you're looking at those suppliers which have your 80% of the spend. You're spending the most money with, you know, your top 20% of the suppliers. But in supply chain risk, that one supplier, maybe you're spending not a lot with them, and it's that small supplier in some remote part of the world that gets compromised. And all of a sudden, you don't have that basic, you know, maybe a sticker for compliance, maybe packaging material, maybe the logo that goes on the grill of your car. And all of a sudden, you can't ship your product. So absolutely, that long tail, that remote supplier who you may not have a lot of visibility into, becomes a big concern area with cybersecurity.
The Procurement Show, exploring the more interesting bits about procurement. And now, the Procurement Fun Fact. This edition's exciting tale of preposterous procurement, bizarre buying, or simply saucy sourcing.
According to Peter Smith's book, Bad Buying, on the 6th of September 2018, a 6.7 magnitude earthquake hit the Hokkaido region in Japan, causing loss of life and widespread damage. In the quake, a number of factories that supply components to Toyota were hit, as well as Toyota's own assembly plants, halting production of Lexus vehicles and the Toyota Land Cruiser, all for export to the US. The incident now serves as a case study for buyers carrying out supply-side risk assessment to include a mapping of suppliers' locations so the impact of a natural disaster at a specific location can be considered.
The Procurement Fun Fact. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com. Send us a tweet, @procurementshow, or connect with us on LinkedIn. Search for The Procurement Show.
I've got two questions to ask you, and the two might be related, and then again, they might not be, actually, come to think of it. The first one is, going back to your thing about AI and what Jonathan just said as well, are we going to have a situation where you've got AI cybersecurity going head-to-head with AI-driven cyber protection? And what happens there? Mm-hmm. Do we get meltdown? But also, when you've got a situation whereby you've got a critical supplier and they perhaps can't afford, or they don't have the mindset or knowledge or capability to roll out the kind of cyber protection that they need in order to protect your overall supply chain, at what point do you or us as the buyer step in and provide support in order to secure that arena?
The first part, yes, there is going to be this constant engagement where the bad guys do something with AI and then the white hats respond to it, right? The good guys respond to it, and then the bad guys take it to the next level and so on. It's not going to end. Risk in general, right, whether it's cybersecurity or otherwise, you cannot eliminate it, but it is always going to be a process of mitigating it. And that brings us into the second question that you had there. At what point do we step in? What do we do as an organization? So what Resilinc prescribes is that first and foremost, you need to do a threat assessment, a risk assessment, if you may, if you take a more broader viewpoint here. Who's in your supply chain? For most parts, you know who your direct suppliers are, but who's right after them, right? Your suppliers, who their suppliers are. Once you do that analysis and get that multi-tier supply chain visibility, you can use software that's available, their technology that's available, including ours, to overlay risks and impact to your business. Then you can do a prioritization and say, those are the suppliers I need to worry about the most. Those are the suppliers I need to address first. Once you have done that identification, then you can look at what the best mitigation strategy is. In some cases, it might be important to work with that supplier in order to make sure that their cybersecurity practices are up to par. It may not be a huge investment to make, but that's an assessment you make. If there is a huge investment to make, then you look at whether it makes more sense to find an alternate supplier to shift business to. That's the trade-off analysis you can do once you have collected the intelligence of who's in your supply chain and overlaid it with the risk associated with them and attach that or connect that to revenue that your company stands to lose if you have a disruption. So that's how we see companies address this problem of, you know, remote suppliers or any supplier having cybersecurity risk.
Now, I guess there's the sort of multiple failure points here, and we're used to some of the main vulnerabilities. But if we just think about a network, and, you know, at home, we're used to putting lots of stuff on our network. We put our camera doorbell on there, children's toys, you know, most children's toys now will connect with the Wi-Fi in some way, monitoring equipment and so on. You know, we're doing the same thing in the workplaces. You could have process monitoring equipment, telemetry, surveillance equipment, all onto a company network of some sort. But is there a risk that some of these things kind of get under the radar and there are weak points. It's just a thing hanging off a network. It's been installed by the IT function. Mm. But somewhere in there's a vulnerability that could actually take us down in some way.
Absolutely. In fact, what I would love to talk about at this point is operational technology. This is the equipment, the IIoT devices, for instance, Industrial Internet of Things, your traditional SCADA systems, control systems that run the shop floors, the factory floors, that run your warehousing, your distribution centers. If you look at these technologies, let's start with the legacy ones like the SCADA systems, the old school control systems. A few years back, we had this attack in the United States on the Colonial Pipeline in the northeastern part of the country. It's a system that delivers gasoline to the eastern parts of the United States, and that got shut down by a ransomware attack. The attack was targeted towards the SCADA system, the control systems, and those systems are actually very widely used in manufacturing today. So attacks like those can very easily shut down manufacturing. You don't have to shut down an email system necessarily. You can definitely shut down your manufacturing operations as well, your supplier's manufacturing operations. IIoT devices, these are really like what you were saying, Jonathan, you know, children's toys connecting to the internet and such. They come with robust security that the vendors provide, but ultimately it comes down to what password are you putting on there. For expediency purposes on the shop floor, we see a lot of admin, username, password, those kind of things still in use. And so these become easy attack vectors to go compromise the operational technologies. So certainly, these new style devices or the traditional control systems are ripe for attack.
Sumit and Jonathan, you remind me of the good old days when there was a very popular IP telephone handset, grey, sat upright, everybody had them. It was on screen in movies, and indeed we had them in this office here, where there was a very well, eventually published hack, I guess you'd say, where you could remotely tap into and activate the microphone. Mm-hmm. This isn't the kind of cyber attack that would bring down an organization, because you're not shutting down any kind of network. But you can listen to what happens in the boardroom. With that kind of information comes a lot of power. Are those kind of examples a thing of the past? If you're going to look at those examples and look at your supply chain and work your way up the supply chain, how can you make sure that vulnerabilities like that don't exist? How can you test the resilience?
The best way to look at this is the following, right? These operational technology systems are not going anywhere, but very frankly speaking, not a lot of people are paying attention to it. And unfortunately, that's not going to change. Even your monitoring systems, the cameras, and so on and so forth, while there is a lot more attention being paid to it, again, if you start talking about those remote, smaller operations, then all bets are off. When we are talking about intellectual property, which is really, you know, another example of what you were asking about, and so much intellectual property gets shared with your suppliers, your direct suppliers, and part of that goes to your suppliers' suppliers and so on. Then as you start looking at it, if those suppliers get compromised, either through some of these ancillary devices or their IT systems are compromised, or there is an attack vector that comes in through the operational technologies into IT, now you have a significant amount of exposure to your intellectual property as well. So the problem might extend well beyond somebody just eavesdropping to getting actual direct access to your intellectual property. And when I say a manufacturer's intellectual property, that of course includes, in many cases, their customers' intellectual property too.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we're into a big data breach. Do you think we can rely on certification here, sort of ISO 27001, Cyber Essentials, Cyber Essentials Plus? Are those things going to guarantee that we don't need to worry, or do we need to do more?
Certainly, those certifications have a lot of value. Let me draw a parallel between ISO 9001 and these certifications. As we know, in manufacturing, ISO 9001 is basically table stakes. Everybody in manufacturing aspires and achieves ISO 9001 for a good reason. It establishes processes in the organization. It establishes a level of quality, and all of this vetted by an independent third party. The same exact concept applies to ISO 27001, SOC 2 Type 2, Cyber Essentials, and so on. It indicates to you as a customer that there is a level of thought and diligence that your supplier is putting in into cybersecurity. However, it's not enough. Just like with quality, it's not enough. Again, with manufacturing, we know what we do with quality. We will collect these documents, we will assess them, but in many cases, we will actually go to the supplier shop floor. We will do a physical inspection, even down to, we will be timing shifts. We will be assessing quality of materials coming off the assembly lines. Something similar, but virtual is what's possible with cybersecurity. Can some of these assessments be done remotely? Good starting point, standardization of certificates that are standards. Beyond that, after you have done this threat assessment, you can start by running a virtual tabletop exercise. One of the challenges that you see with collecting information with cybersecurity is you just collect information in spreadsheets and it sits there. What we did at Resilinc instead was made all of these assessments online. So you can collect the information online and immediately and automatically generate analytics out of it. So that's the next step to take beyond certifications. Get this information in a format that analytics can be easily run on. And so you can quantify the risks. Once you have quantified the risks, then you can run a number of different tabletop exercises with your suppliers virtually over Zoom, Teams, what have you, to get a better sense of how prepared they really are. Think of it as a virtual audit in a sense. Beyond that now, then you can further narrow down the number of suppliers who need even more and more deeper, more intrusive audits. That small subset is where you may want to send people to the physical location. But for most parts, I would say you should be able to do these assessments remotely.
It's time to Ask Jonathan.
And today's Ask Jonathan comes from Matilda Holmberg from Malmo in Sweden, who writes, Jonathan, how do I go about creating a good scorecard for the supplier I look after?
Okay, great question. Scorecards are one of these things everybody tries to create big, elaborate scorecards. Say, yep. Hey, look at my scorecard. I've got 30 KPIs.
I do the same when I'm playing Scrabble.
But you always lose.
That's true.
The trick here is less is more. And it doesn't follow that just because you can measure it, you should measure it. Come back to what a key performance indicator is, which is what we're trying to measure on our scorecards. So it is an indicator. In other words, it's a measure or an indicator compiled from a series of measures to tell us the status of something or the situation of something. It's an indicator of performance, but it's key. And the key bit is important because it's finding what is the one thing that tells you everything you need to know about that supplier or what I'm buying or something that's happening. So the trick here is scarcity. So imagine that every key performance indicator you're going to put on your scorecard is going to cost you $10,000 or euros or pounds, and you've only got so much money. So if you approach it from the perspective of scarcity, you know, what is the thing, what is the piece of information that tells me what I need to know? So avoid having a list of things to measure. If you're going to measure things like, I don't know, if you're buying something, you know, delivery and sort of quality levels and all the usual things that you would typically measure, you know, those things are useful. You perhaps want to measure those things, but how relevant are they? If you've got a supply situation where stuff is regularly turning up and it's very rare that you're getting any sort of issues, you know, are those the key measures of success? If it's critical to the production line that it turns up on time, yeah, you want to be measuring that stuff. So what is the stuff that's critical and important, and what are the minimum handful of things you need to measure or understand to be able to have a view on how well a supplier or supply chain is performing? So scarcity, less is more. You really don't want more than about 5 or 7 measures on it, typically. Aim for a handful of things that will tell you everything that you need to know about them and focus on the things that matter. You might have some more detailed measures you can dip into somewhere else, but in terms of the scorecard, less is more.
Fantastic. Wise words from Jonathan there. Just because you can measure it doesn't mean you should measure it. Remember that moving forward in your life. If you... Oh, here's how to get in touch.
Ask Jonathan. Email your question to jonathan@theprocurementshow.com. You might be part of the next show. The Procurement Show. The latest thinking, the greatest insights.
Now, I've got a simply written question, but I've got a feeling the answer is not going to be such a simple one. What are the biggest risks here that we need to be aware of? What could possibly go wrong?
The first thing I will say is the biggest risk is this hope is a strategy thing.
Yeah.
Well, just believe that it's not going to happen to you. But what I tell my customers at Resilinc is, look, don't become a statistic. That is the biggest challenge we have, the biggest risk we have, which is this blind spot that it cannot happen to me. That's the number one risk that we have to address. Start with a process of a practice where you are putting the right processes, people, and technology in place so you can start getting an understanding of the risk. The second big issue that we see is the recentness or the freshness of information about IT processes. Here's one thing we see at Resilinc all the time. The customer, the manufacturer will collect cybersecurity information, process information from their suppliers when they're qualifying the supplier. After that, there is no periodic reassessment happening. Years will go by before you collect new information from the suppliers. And as we know, things change so quickly in cybersecurity. The freshness of the information is the second big risk that we see. And then the third biggest risk we see is just a lack of understanding of who's in the supply chain. So that visibility beyond your direct suppliers is the biggest risk. In general, with supply chain resiliency, a majority of the risk, 80%+ of your risk, comes from your second tier and beyond. Most don't have that visibility. Mm.
What you're saying, together with what you mentioned earlier, people and technology as a risk, awareness as a risk, makes me want to direct the conversation to Jonathan again. Also seems that it's a bit of a training issue, a communications issue.
Yeah, you need to teach procurement people how to assess risk and understand the supply base, not just your suppliers, the supply base, and also the ability for the supply base to supply what it is you're making. You can't just focus on the suppliers. You need to look at the thing and the vulnerabilities there. Now, when I do training, we teach risk assessments, part of what we do. And quite often I'll ask the group, okay, so who has a risk register? Who does this? 50% typically will say, yes, we do it. The other 50% go, no, they either don't know or they haven't got one, or they'll say, what's a risk register? And those are the companies that get caught out when that thing happens where you've got some sort of global catastrophe or you get hacked and something goes down. Somebody says, you know, where's your plan B? And people go, plan what? So training is a big thing. But the key thing here is that training shouldn't just be to the procurement people. You actually need to train the organization, because remember, suppliers belong to the organization. They don't belong to procurement. What we were buying is specified, developed by the organization. So you've got to get the whole organization to think about risk as part of its DNA, part of what it does. So the organizations that have an attitude to risk are the ones that come out of this well. If the organization hasn't got the right attitude to risk, the procurement people probably don't. So, yes, you've got to train everybody, but you've got to train the whole organization. Really.
But furthermore, you mentioned about concepts like risk registers, which is part of, is it the PRINCE2 concept? Many organizations will have a risk register in order to demonstrate good due diligence and best practice.
Yeah.
Yet they don't act upon the results of that register.
Some do. And Sumit, you mentioned ISO 9001 earlier. If you have ISO 9001, as we do, you have to maintain a risk register and it has to be relevant. So at an organization level, you know, there are some organizations that take it very seriously and review it and think about what's the likelihood, what's the severity, and what are we going to do? And many of those things are supply chain factors. So it drives into the supply chain. And sustainability is what are the new big kind of risk factors, not just cyber, but all of those things together mean suddenly risk in the supply base is a big concern for any organization, because we're at the point now, whether it's a cyber attack, whether it's brand damage because you found child labor in one of your supply chains, those things can take a company down big time. So yeah, you've absolutely got to have this organization approach to training and understanding the risk. I'm interested in, what do we do here, Sumit? Where do we start if we're going to understand our supply chains?
What we prescribe at Resilinc is the following, and I think, Jonathan, you will agree with this. Risk and resiliency is a journey. You have to start somewhere and you make progress over time. It is not something that happens overnight, but you have to start. That's the key. If you don't start on the journey, you don't get to resiliency. And absolutely, as you said earlier, this has to be an organizational level of program. This has to be to train the entire organization. It's not just procurement's job. So all of that, it really makes this a journey. You start small. you build up knowledge, you build up intelligence, you build up the right processes, you put the right technologies in place, you put the right talent in place as well through training, through new hiring, whatever that requires, and gradually you build up resiliency. So you start small. What does small mean? For example, with Resilink, what small means is you start by just getting coverage of your direct suppliers. Just get this 24/7 monitoring. So if should a cybersecurity incident occur, you actually know about it. And that's a good starting point. Not a lot of overhead there, not a lot of work to be put in, but it's a good starting point. Get your suppliers engaged. So if a cybersecurity incident happens, if it's known or if it's not known, you get notified. Perhaps they're not going to do it out of the goodness of their own hearts. Put it in contracts. Then we have so much control and power, in a sense, with suppliers when it comes to contract negotiations and what goes in the contract terms. Use it. Start small, like I said. Then take the next step, map out your supply chain, overlay it with the risk in the supply chain. And I will say this, right? It's not just about cybersecurity risk. Again, as Jonathan pointed out, all sorts of ESG-related risks are relevant to supply chains. Traditional risks around financial risk, business continuity continue to remain problems, geopolitical risks, etc. Quantify them, shortlist the suppliers you need to address first based on impact to business as opposed to based on spend you have with the suppliers. That traditional spend mindset does not work with risk. Then start mitigating. Again, this does not have to be complicated, right? You don't have to start with, let's start tweaking our safety stock. You can take baby steps here as well. You know, work with your suppliers. Give them the incentives to make themselves better. We've always found that just using the stick, threatening to take away business, doesn't work well. The better approach is rewards. If a supplier works with you to improve their cybersecurity practices, give them recognition, awards, you know, referrals, recommendations, all those go a much longer way in fostering good behavior. Then keep going, right? Next step up. Work with your suppliers to get their suppliers, work with your suppliers to make their suppliers more resilient, and so on. Ultimately, you will get to a point where your exposure, should a disruption happen, is minimized. And that is the end goal for us.
Fantastic. See, it's a shared problem, isn't it? Brings about shared solutions. It's come to that stage in the show, and regular listeners to the show will know that I like to look forward to the weekend at the end of the conversation.
Yes.
And do you know what, Jonathan? This strange thing happened to me only the other day. I'm absolutely convinced that my online ordering system got hacked, and I got twice the amount of takeaway food that I originally planned.
See, that happens to me.
Does it really?
But I think that's because I probably put it in the basket in the first place.
And you forgot to take it out. It happens to me all the time, which leads me on to the subject of our top three takeaways. So I would like to ask you something. What are your top three takeaways?
My first takeaway would be that supply chain cybersecurity attacks are not going away. As we discussed earlier, they're only going to increase in number and sophistication. So every organization owes it to their stakeholders, to their shareholders, to build a robust supply chain. And this is where procurement has to step up. This is where procurement has to take the lead with cybersecurity as well. They may not be the subject matter experts in cybersecurity, but they have the relationships with suppliers. So it is on procurement to take the lead, get working with the suppliers, and then bring in the InfoSec cybersecurity experts as required. Mm-hmm. That's number one. Takeaway number two, don't leave it to your suppliers. Just telling them, hey, go do something about it is insufficient. You as a procurement organization have to push them, hold them responsible for implementing cybersecurity, not just for themselves, but also for their suppliers. But take a balanced approach. Again, as I was saying earlier, right? Balance it out. There has to be a consequence that the suppliers face for not complying with your cybersecurity requirements, but there also has to be a very strong reward system. Rewarding good performance, as we know, goes a long ways in fostering good behavior. This I cannot stress enough. You reward one supplier, the other suppliers are going to look for the same recognition from you, and they are also going to try harder to comply.
Good, yeah.
Last but not least, I will go back to hope is not a strategy. As an organization, and this goes beyond procurement now, you must invest in technology, people, and processes. This is the only way to build a robust supply chain that is resilient not just to cybersecurity attacks, but to any other kind of disruption, including compliance-related or geopolitical.
Fantastic. Some good takeaways there. Especially point number one is not going away, which is exactly the same as my belly at the moment, but never mind.
And the other thing that's not going away, hope is not a strategy.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. Sumit, thank you so much for joining us on The Procurement Show today. We've learned a lot about risk. We've learned a lot about cybersecurity in the supply chain and how we can get good at it. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me on this show. Again, I am so passionate about supply chain cybersecurity, and I believe that we as an industry have to get more proactive with it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Procurement Show. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com. Connect with us on LinkedIn, search for The Procurement Show, and on Twitter @ProcurementShow. Visit us at theprocurementshow.com. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, enabling the future of procurement in organizations around the globe. Copyright Positive Purchasing, all rights reserved. Produced by Fresh Air Studios.